Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. Before getting to the topics of this episode, the next show, next week, an interview I did with the author of a little book that was published in 2011. And we just did a second printing, a limited edition. Only about 28 copies. And it's called Children of the Sun, Prosatry Unplugged. It's by Teocasin Ghost Horse. He's of the Cheyenne River Lakota Nation. And it's a wonderful little book. Got poems and prose, so it's prosatry. Prosatry Unplugged. So, gonna get into, via the interview, what some of what the book is about, and also some of what he is doing. He recently started the Akantu Institute, and there's more information about that online, and he's going to explain that when you hear the interview. You'll find out more. Also, check out his wonderful radio show in its 30th year, First Voices Radio. And that, hearing him talk from a whole different perspective, language background, perception of the cosmovision and such like, it'll make you think in a different way. On with the topic of the day, doing two bits, kind of news, book news this week, and also doing book news. And since books are conveyors of information, let's call it a topic that affects that information flow. So personally, over the years, I've done a lot of research on topics, some via books, but a lot of it online. So what happens online affects what I write in my essays and in my books and in what I think about and what I talk to friends about and what I don't talk to people about. So now there's this new thing that's happening. I just heard about this, which is, as they say, Orwellian. This is the government is starting the sponsored by the Department of Homeland Security, a disinformation governance board to coordinate countering misinformation related to Homeland Security, focused specifically on irregular migration and Russia. This is from, I think, Politico, some magazine online. Nina Jankowicz will head the board as executive director. She was previously a disinformation fellow at the Wilson Center. And the reason I'm laughing is because, like, disinformation is a joke. I mean, in some ways it's a joke, in some ways it's not a joke. I mean, a book I bought a while ago, James Lowen, almost 20 years ago, Lies My Teacher Told Me. So for him to write that book, there had to be teachers and publishers and writers publishing and writing and teaching books that were lies. And yet that was the whole educational system. And then he wrote a book that was quite popular, still is, I think, about the lies they told to correct the lies. So that's been going on, you know, disinformation, misinformation. There are sloppy journalists, they're deliberately poor journalists, they're lazy journalists. So, like, where does one draw the line? And the idea of the government clamping down on what they consider misinformation, again, is Orwellian. And of recent, there's been literal censorship via YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Journalists I know and follow, some of them have been suspended. It's all about control of the narrative, basically. Control of the narrative, which is control of your mind at some level, because they say you are what you eat. Well, you're kind of like we are and we think what we read to some degree, to a lot of degree. That is the power of information. So one brief example, Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, who is, I don't follow much of the mainstream media, but from what I've read, he's sort of like the new darling of the mainstream, getting all kinds of airtime. But then I read this bit in an article by Mike Whitney. Few people know that Zelensky is also an extremely rich guy, probably a billionaire, and that he is a creature of Ukraine's most notorious mobster billionaire, the godfather, T-O-O, of the sadistic Nazi Azov battalion, Igor Komolovsky. So, yeah, you know, there it gets into, okay, who's accurate with the character portrayal? But if you read farther, you start to get some facts, and you can, you know, you have to make up your own opinion. But he was elected in a landslide victory in 2019 on the promise of easing tensions with Russia and resolving the crisis in the breakaway republics in East Ukraine. He has made no attempt to keep his word on either issue. Instead, he has greatly exacerbated Ukraine's internal crisis while relentlessly provoking Russia. Zelensky has had numerous opportunities to smooth things over with Moscow and prevent the outbreak of hostilities. Instead, he has consistently made matters worse by blindly following Washington's directives. Now, some people are going to find that preposterous because they've been reading other news. So there's the question, which ties into who's going to determine what's misinformation and disinformation. If the government is determining that, then it's, you know, obviously going to be slanted to some degree. So that's a big issue. Another news story, a similar kind of thing. This is an somewhat similar. Chris Hedges, the article is titled Alice Walker and the Price of Conscience. Alice Walker was disinvited to the Bay Area Book Festival after Zionist groups threatened to carry out protests. The public and presenters are complicit in her blacklisting if they attend. So what was she doing? She supposedly liked... The organizers disinvited her from the event because she praised the writings of the New Age author David Icke and called his book, And the Truth Shall Set You Free, brave. Icke has denied critics charges of anti-Semitism. So there again, who do you believe? This is Zionist-backed decision because one author liked a book by another author and the author is supposedly anti-Semite, which he denies. So that's how crazy the misinformation, disinformation thing can get. And as Hedges astutely points out, banning writers because of books they like or find interesting nullifies the whole point of a book festival. Then he talks about, should I be banned for liking Joseph Heller's Catch-22, which I recently reread, and which is rabidly misogynistic? Should I be banned for loving William Butler Yeats, who, like Ezra Pound, many of whose poems I have also committed to memory, was a fascist collaborator? Should I be banned because I revere Hannah Arendt, whose attitudes towards African Americans were paternalistic at best and arguably racist? She wrote about the Nazis, you know, psychoanalyzing the psychosis of the Nazis. Should I be banned because I cherish books by C.S. Lewis, Norman Mailer, and D.H. Lawrence, who were homophobic? So this is what's going on nowadays in the information wars, is kind of how it goes. Then I figured I'd segue to books I'm reading and not reading, which is not about censorship, but is actually about just my ability to concentrate and the time to read. And I'm sort of like a streak hitter. If I can really get into a book or a book grabs me, I will sit there, and that is like a focus. And other times I'm scattered amongst a bunch of books, which is happening now. So here I'm going to briefly mention books I am reading and not reading. The first one I wanted to find out more about the native people in the area where I'm at. And so having grown up in the city and being a New Yorker, I know very little. I do know that the Lenape people, one of the main people of the area and on along the East Coast. And so I looked online, but then I asked a friend who's Shawnee and Lenape, and he suggested The Delaware Indians, A History by C.A. Weslager. And it's a 500-page book. It was written in 1996, was the old third printing. But it's got a lot of history. It's got a lot of info. Sometimes I flip around to get a little bit, but it's the kind of book I got to be in the mood to get into. By now, you probably know that the sale of Manhattan for $24 is quite the bunk story. And that's actually something that Tiokasin mentions in his book. I'll read that. Let us not ignore the fact that 9/11 was not the largest attack on this land. There were thousands, including two near and on the World Trade Center site of Wappinger or Lenni Lenape, on what was then known as New Amsterdam, what today is Manhattan, where the mythical exchange of trinkets, or $24 for ownership of a fishing port used and shared by many native nations because of its abundance of shellfish and fish. The native, not having the concept of ownership, concluded that the Dutch were thanking them or sharing with them their appreciation. Once the natives returned to the area, the occupiers massacred the indigenous people. And this is intense, so nowadays they call it a trigger warning, but a game of kickball was then played with the decapitated heads of natives. So that's horrific, and that is, in my opinion, that's one reason why that guy wrote the book Lies My Teacher Told Me, because they don't want to teach kids that kind of stuff in school for the most part. So that's I don't know, that loosely ties into the whole what's information, what's disinformation. Personally, I trust, like, someone who's a native knows about native stuff and knows that history, so I trust that opinion over some historian who maybe lives somewhere else and this and that. And that segues to another book. This is called Indigenous Nations' Rights in the Balance, an analysis of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This is by Charmaine Whiteface. Fascinating. So you read that subtext, the subtitle, Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Sounds good, right? Wow. About time. They're getting some rights. But when then you start reading more and it's like, wait a second. Basically, what she does, as she writes, this comparative analysis is given to forewarn my own people, other indigenous nations, and other states who still try to keep their integrity. Those who are concerned for justice and the continued existence of indigenous nations as indigenous nations will see and understand how the wording in this declaration will benefit the colonizers more than the nations it was designed for, the indigenous nations. And then I already highlighted, read like 25 pages. It's comparative, so she compares the different versions. So it's like an exercise in editing and cognition or understanding what the words are saying, because there's very subtle differences, but they make a huge difference in the interpretations and the meanings. And then you learn some history. For the Great Sioux Nation, the abuse of children was and is a form of forced assimilation. There was no child abuse of any kind prior to contact with the colonizers. I'll read that again. There was no child abuse of any kind prior to contact with the colonizers. And here's the gist. I have this underlined. The gist of the hypocrisy: without the approval or consensus of indigenous peoples and nations, the General Assembly deleted one of the most basic reasons for the need for the declaration in the first place, indigenous peoples' right to coexist with others. It is a travesty that this preambular paragraph was deleted from the text in its entirety. So there again is tying into another aspect of misinformation and disinformation and fact-checking and censorship and fake news and whatever other label you want to put on it. Now, a different book. One of my favorite movie directors, and if you want to argue about what the best movie ever made is, I will argue with that. I don't like to argue, but I'll gladly argue with you. Andrei Tarkovsky, his film Stalker, which has nothing to do with stalking women at all, perhaps, or the best film ever made. The book is called Sculpting in Time. The great Russian filmmaker discusses his art. That's So far, a fascinating read. Oh my God, am I allowed to talk about an amazing film director who explored what life is about, what spirituality is about, what dreams and memories and the natural world, because he was Russian. And in this book, I learned that the way he describes filmmaking is almost the way it was almost like writing haiku. Oh, and here's a good quote: "The true artistic image is always based on an organic link between idea and form." Oh yeah, here's where he says about art: "Of course, such reproduction of real life sensations is not an end in itself, but it can be given meaning aesthetically and so become a medium for deep and serious thought. To be faithful to life, intrinsically truthful, a work has for me to be at once an exact factual account and a true communication of feelings." An exact factual account and a true communication of feelings. And that is very much the essence of haiku poetry. And another book I heard someone recommend or mention, I started this a long time ago and I read about half of it because I read mostly the vegetables. I haven't gotten to much of the fruits. "Eating on the Wild Side" by Jo Robinson. She's got a website about meats and veggies and tomato, beets, and fruits. And let's see, some cool stuff in here. Let's see, like some things I remember from reading this. Carrots have more nutrients if you cook them whole and then chop them up afterwards. And garlic has more nutrients. He gives all the scientific terms and stuff for that, or you know what the actual components are. But I just use the simplified "good is good." Good and more. The carrots cook. The garlic, if you chop it and let it sit out for 10 minutes before cooking with it, good. More nutrients. Tomato sauce, which probably every Italian knows, 30 minutes or more nutrients, good. So lots of little tips about how to do food preparation in that book. Another book I started, this guy's on, you can look him up on YouTube, lots of different talks, very interesting perspective from the Australian Aborigines perspective, called Sand Talk by Tyson Yonkaporta. I've been jumping around and reading bits and bits all over the place. So I have not one I've been able thus far to start at the beginning and go to the so-called end, perhaps because of his Aborigines perspective, which is non-linear. But anyway, that's a cool book. And then one a friend recommended, this is from 1982. "Physics as Metaphor: A Mind-Expanding Exploration of the Human Side of Science in the Tradition of Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance and the Tao of Physics" by Roger S. Jones. And this gets into the, from the little I've read so far, it seems much like, kind of like a physics explanation approach to native understanding of the and other spiritual traditions or mystics that see the interconnectedness of all beings. So he questions science in sort of the ability to be objective or to do an experiment, that kind of thing, because you know you're the person who's doing it is having an influence on the experiment. So where do you draw the line? But that may not be the best little example because I've only read a few pages. Well, I'll read one of the blurbs in the back here. "Exploring the symbolic nature of what he calls the cardinal metaphors of physical reality, space, time, matter, and number, Jones evaluates the use of these basic concepts in the physical sciences, and looks at the ways in which they color our general worldview." So it has a lot to do with how one perceives the world, you know, in the way that everything is actually, at an atomic level, everything is actually in motion. So the desk that I'm sitting at now, it looks solid, it looks like it's in one piece, but if I were able to see it with eyes from another dimensional perspective or a microscope or whatever, I would realize it's freaking moving around, but it appears to be still, and that's, isn't that like naturally amazing magic that the world is like that? Oh yeah, that's a book also that's some of the best books I've ever read have been the ones that are like really challenging and really make me stop and think. And it changes my way of thinking, changes my way of seeing the world and myself and how to perceive this and that. But sometimes that's what it takes, is to really wrestle with a book a bit. You know, some people want to have an easy read and it's nice and it's entertaining and that has its place. But then I think my encouragement for people is sometimes to take on a difficult book as a challenge. I mean, not as a punishment, but as a challenge to learn something and to stretch your mind, stretch your thinking, and get out of your own, you know, limited little box of perception, or expand the way you view the world. Because that's what I see as, you know, what draws me to books and reading, is that I'm learning things that other people have thought about, or things that I wouldn't have thought of. Or sometimes it's a perspective, sometimes it's information, sometimes it's history, but it helps me understand a people better. Sometimes, as you know, some of the books about the native people, it helps me understand their perspective with the world, which I can apply to myself, for myself, but also who they are as a people, because it's coming from them. So thanks for listening to the updates and what's going on in the world news, and what's happening on the local couch. And there'll be information on the All Book Books website for how to order the Book of Prosatry, Children of the Sun by Teocasin Ghost Horse. It's a small book, but it's packed full of stuff that you can think about and learn from. It's 48 pages. And it's a fundraiser to raise funds for his recently started Akantu Institute. So normally the book was originally at $15, but we're asking $30 a book as it's part of a fundraiser. So you can read more about what the money is helping to do, and read more about the book on the web page. So thank you for your attention, and thank you for listening. Be well.